This is Michael Eric Dyson. When I'm in the Oakland, Berkeley, San Francisco area, and I want to hear the real deal, I listen to Hard Knock Radio with my man Davey D. You heard?
Peace. This is Brother Africa Bambaataa, godfather of hip-hop culture, and I'm on Hard Knock Radio, 94.1 KPFA, as they blow your funky mind.
Read my lips, kid. The typical cat is sickest. If you don't believe me, check the wish list. Peace. This is Denizen Kane, representing for Hard Knock Radio. I was born with two tongues, Chicago, typical cats, all of that. Monday through Friday, 94.1 KPFA, 4 to 5 p.m. Tune in. Peace.
Tonight, the third debate in the second presidential debate is going down in Long Island, New York. And Mitt Romney and Barack Obama won't be talking to the people in New York. They won't be talking to the people in California, where we're broadcasting from. And they won't be broadcasting to people in a whole lot of places. Ground zero for them is a little state called Ohio. That's where it's a major battleground. And depending on who you talk to, that's where this election may be decided, depending on which way that electorate goes. And I wanted to bring a couple of people to our airwaves that are knee-deep. One of them is traveling the country, doing speaking tours with a number of activists, artists, and tastemakers with the organization called Rap Sessions. He is also the founder or co-founder of the Hip Hop Political Convention and the author of several books, including The Hip Hop Generation. His name is Bakari Katwana. Bakari, welcome to the show. Also on the phone line with us, who is also knee-deep in Ohio and somebody who's been a part of the Hip Hop Political Convention and has been participated in a couple of these rap session tours. Her name is Angela Woodson, and many people in our circles say that in 08, she was one of the key reasons why Barack Obama was able to win the great state of Ohio. She's an incredible organizer. She's on the phone line with us. Welcome to the show, Bakari and Angela. How y'all doing this morning from the great state of Ohio?
Hello.
Bakari, how you doing, my friend?
Good. Is Angela on?
I'm on. Good morning. Hey. Hey, David.
The first and obvious question, as I said in my intro, tonight's debate will not be talking to us in California, which, has the largest population. It won't be talking to the people in New York. It's going to be talking to you. And first of all, what is it like in Ohio, and what do you think needs to be said in order for either candidate to resonate with the people that are in your state? And I'll start off with you, Bakari.
Well, I think this is more of an Angela question than it is one for me. Most of, the work, as you know, that I do is around the country and really focused on politicizing young people and help and getting them to understand why these elections are important. I think in terms of Ohio, Angela is out here on the ground dealing with the madness and the legions of folks from out of the state who come here because they think this is the most important place to be. It's kind of a crazy scene, and she's in the midst of it.
Let me just start there with this, because you have been politicizing a lot of people, and you've been doing this for more than a decade. What do you think needs to be said, and have these candidates been resonating with the audiences that you've been bringing to the rap session tours?
I think that it's interesting. I think that we have, those of us who organize around hip-hop, I think that our issues have never really been, have never yet to date really taken center stage in an ongoing way. And so a lot of times I think we get pulled into is happening for the Democratic Party, which is not always necessarily in our best interest. So as we're going around the country, I think that we're having a very different type of conversation than I think is taking place nationally. I think one of the things that constantly keeps coming up is a debate, not between Romney, whether you're going to vote for Romney or Obama, but what is the distinction between those people who are riding for Obama no matter what, and those people who are disgruntled and have become very cynical because they feel like they didn't get what they wanted, that Obama didn't fight hard enough, that their issues aren't being addressed, that unemployment isn't going down fast enough for them, that foreign policy is, you know, making us more of an international bad guy and doesn't reflect their interests. So I think, to me, the battle that we're seeing play out within our community, particularly at these rap sessions events, are these type of discussions between those who've grown cynical and think that, and even questioning whether or not voting is a waste of time, and feeling like they will reluctantly vote, some of them and some not. That, to me, seems to be the more critical conversation that I'm hearing.
Which direction do you see people leaning, and is there any particular thing that could be done in the 11th hour to bring people on the same page and have them enthusiastically get behind either candidate the way that we saw in 2008, which, you know, many people attribute the election of Barack Obama to that very demographic of people that you're speaking to? You're on college campuses, it's young folks, a lot of people of color who came out in record numbers and have also been the ones to be the most dissatisfied or expressing it.
I mean, I think we're going to see significant people voting, but not because of the candidates or anything that they're saying. I think people are going to vote because increasingly they see that their interests in the short term are tied to voting. So I think people will vote. I just don't think that these candidates are inspiring them to vote more. And I think that because of the tactics coming from the Republican Party, I think people are going to participate just because they know that there are people out here trying to keep them from participating.
Let me turn this question to you, Angela. And I did mention that tonight's debate is going to be directed to people in Ohio, as it was in 08 and as it was in 04. And you've been a key organizer in that state. How are you seeing things play out this time around in 2012?
Well, it's a couple factors. Now they have to motivate the base. The Democratic base, as well as the independent base, which is, you know, which makes us a swing state, they have to figure out how to reengage everybody back in. I think everybody thinks here in Ohio that everybody, even though they're Democrats, they're 100% on board. But some of them, as Bakari just articulated, are feeling disengaged because they don't feel that the president delivered what he said he was going to deliver, or really don't know what he did deliver. Because there's certain programs and certain things that, and I don't know where the communication breakdown happened that he has done that just didn't get to the ground, and especially the ground here in Ohio. And so we had the conversation where we were talking about with HBCUs. Well, this is the first president that put a liaison to deal with historical black colleges, which is something that, you know, those of us in the African-American community are passionate about. And so, and trying to address some of their dilemmas and issues. And see, these are things that somehow don't make mass media and didn't make kind of the groundswell, you know, here in Ohio. And so I think Ohio right now is trying to figure out which one of these candidates meets my basic needs. And none of them are feeling turned on about, you know, bolting down some of the doors so much, because they're trying to see which one of these two people are going to meet their basic needs. But in the same token, there are those like myself saying, you can't just put all of this on one human being. I mean, he is the president of the United States, but at the end of the day, you still have congressional seats that have to anchor and weigh in on policies that he creates. And we also have some very crucial a senator's race here, as well as some congressional races, because we got redistricted really differently than everybody. And so therefore you have very tight congressional races that will be up till the next day trying to figure out if that's still the same seat or not.
Right. And we should remind people, Ohio's the home to the Speaker of the House, John Boehner. It is also the place where Dennis Kucinich, one of the more progressive Democrats, lost his seat due to redistricting. With all that being said, people might look or might be listening and saying, you know what, folks who are complaining didn't organize enough. They didn't put in the work that was needed to be put in to ensure that whatever political aspects that they wanted to come to fruition would really happen. How do you respond to that? And I'll start off with you, Angela, because you are an organizer.
Well, I think what it is, too, is that you have to keep organizing. You just can't turn up the volume on because it's a presidential election year. I think it saddens me because just looking at the amount of dollars that has been dumped into Ohio just nationally from organizing all the way to media. I mean, the media market here is just beyond me in millions and trillions of dollars is what they've spent in ads. But what's interesting are the ads are all different. The ads are all crafted to the area. If you're in Cincinnati, Cincinnati people don't see what I see here in Cleveland. And Columbus people don't see what I see here in Cleveland, and the vice versa with Youngstown. So though the media market itself is interesting, but it's also the organizing market that's interesting. You can tell that there's heavy organizations where I am in Cuyahoga County, whereas it's less organization and mobilization in other pockets in the Appalachia pockets of the state. So it's just kind of just interesting that it all seems to happen in the presidential year. And then when we get ready for the next year of the gubernatorial, everybody's kind of looking like, well, where's all the resources and where's all the fanfare that comes with the presidential election? And I hope at one point in one juncture, there's more of a deeper research and a deeper conversation of why is that? And why aren't people connecting local dots, local politicians to some of this, you know, and just put everything on the national level?
Well, why isn't that happening?
Well, I mean, I think it's a real tragedy what Angela is saying, and I think this whole divide between with all this focus on the presidential race, I want to kind of circle back to some of the things you're saying about the debate early on, Davey, and that is, you know, I think that from where I sit and from what I see, to me it seems that most of these communities that they're dumping this money in to try to turn out people for Obama, I think that these communities, to me, have already decided who they're voting for. And like Angela is saying, to me, I think the people on the fence are out in these rural areas, and it seems to be less of a concentration in those areas. So I think that's one thing. Something else that you're saying, Davey, I think that we have to have this we have to develop the political sophistication to see beyond just the presidential race, and maybe what it is going to take is, you know, people putting increasing focus on what they call down ballot voting instead of just concentrating on these presidential races. Something like over 500 million spent each by both parties on this advertising throughout the country, and it's an obscene amount of money to get people focused on these presidential candidates, mm-hmm. when there's so much else going on that's going to affect where the country's going and where people should be putting their focus. And we really need to ramp up, I think, our conversation about down-ballot voting, which was one of the bright spots on the Rap Sessions tour when Lupe Fiasco dropped in on a conversation that we're having. Actually, Angela was there in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia, and really spoke to that, you know, that and that we really need to put this greater focus on, you know, basically what he's saying was he was castigated for saying people shouldn't vote for president. And he said, well, I was saying people shouldn't vote for president, but I wasn't saying that I don't vote.
Right.
And I thought I think it's a very important distinction, and the reaction to that, I think, was important, because, again, it shows this divide between the people that are riding for Obama no matter what and people who are growing cynical about the process because of this intensified focus on just the presidential races alone.
That's the voice of Bakari Kitwana, the author of the book Hip Hop Generation and the founder of Tor, called Rap Sessions. We also have on the phone line out of Ohio, Angela Woodson. Let me ask both of you. People would say that there should have been a major wake-up call for people to understand the importance of staying organized and politically engaged, at least to some level, electorally speaking, when they saw what took place during the midterms. In Ohio, you guys saw that there were similar union bills, union bashing bills, come to fruition the same way that we associate what happened in Wisconsin, your neighboring state. We also saw that there was a lot of talk about tuition increases and money being taken out of safety net programs as a result of people not being as engaged in allowing a very extremist type of party take over Congress and move into these positions on the state side, into positions of power. In Ohio, we saw that almost immediately after the 08 election, laws were put into place, or the start of putting laws into place to bring about voter suppression, ID bills, and all this other stuff with organizations like ALEC being key facilitators of that. With that type of activity, did people get the message and connect the dots, or are we talking about just obscene amounts of money that literally overwhelm any type of organizing that people would do to try and push for change? And I'll start off with you on this, Angela.
Well, I think what it is I think it's a little of both of what you're saying. It's an enormous amount of money being dumped on what certain individuals' agendas are. And then you have those that are really passionate about that cause. One of the things we said is how the presidential election kind of comes in, does what it does, and then moves out. I mean, there's been these enormous voter registration drives, enormous. And like you just said, at the midterm, we didn't see enormous registration, voter registration drives here in Ohio. It just wasn't happening during the midterm as much as it is now.
But people were,
March.
But people were registering. Are you talking about just the difference of money that comes in?
The difference of money that comes in and the actual drives that we're pushing for actual registration to take place. You could tell the difference. You could tell the energy. You could see that there weren't organizations on top of organizations. And so, you know, and again, it comes because of all these new laws and policies, just as you mentioned, the organizations can't even sit down and have a collective conversation, so they're not running into each other and duplicating work, which has been one of my arguments on the ground, because there's so much activity. Like, how do we not duplicate the work? But as you said about Congressman Dennis Kucinich, people are going to start to feel his presence not there. It's not just the nation, but here in Ohio, because you're right, he's very progressive. He is very progressive. And it's unfortunate that, as I told somebody, you know, it's how ironic when our district lines got drawn, you ended up taking two seats. His was just one of them, that you pinned two veteran Congress people against each other. I mean, he was put against Marcy Catcher, who had just as much tenure as he has in the Congress, if not longer, and who's very well loved in the Toledo in the Western Ohio belt. So that was just the way the lines were drawn. And then you have now, Betty Sutton, who's faced with a veteran who's a sitting congresswoman, who's faced against Renisi, who's a Republican sitting congressman. And now you have that battle that we have to watch. But then again, when we lost, you know, the governor's seat and the secretary of state, and I know everybody harps on the governor's seat, but I still harp on the secretary of state's office, because when you talk about voter suppression, that's where it's coming from. It's coming from our secretary of state's office, who's taking right now a argument that the campaign of Obama has sued him about the last weekend of voting, which he doesn't want to do, and now he's taking it to the U.S. Supreme Court. And so I keep saying, how can we continue to let this person, any of these Secretary of State's office that oversee a process that's supposed to be fair for everyone to take part in, to keep building suppression blocks so we don't participate in the effort? Why are we not highlighting more the Secretary of State's offices and putting them more on the carpet and putting them more in the rooms and asking them tougher questions, instead of being fixated so much on the presidency and the governor's race that I'm not saying aren't important. They are important. But again, there are other seats that are just as important, too, that we need to mobilize and talk about.
Should the president be talking about the voter suppression stuff in this debate? Because he certainly didn't in the first one. Angela. And you know, you're somebody that told him he needs to get, you told him directly to his face, he needs to step it up.
Well, at the end of the day, he, you know, I think he will step it up this time around. Is he going to talk about voter suppression? Well, this is a town hall. And that's the other thing. We've got to pay attention to the difference of debate. Debate that happened the first time was your typical, you know, moderator who asked the questions. And now this is where the questions are coming from, people that are going to be, as you stated, in the audience. So this is where he's probably going to feel most comfortable. Yeah. I mean, I've noticed that in this type of atmosphere, he's more at home when it's just coming from a direct person, where it is more of somewhere he's trying to figure out, okay, where is this question actually coming from? But he can size the person up looking dead at him on. It's going to be interesting to see how does Mitt Romney handle this, because I have not seen him in that kind of fashion. And I'm still fascinated that they're using Rob Portman, our senator here, as the Obama person to you know, prep him and prepare him for that. Seeing he's a first-term senator, and I don't even think he served while Obama was U.S. senator. So I'm trying to figure out, how does he know Obama so well that they could put him on the other side? So it's all kind of interesting.
Bakari, as we close out, the hip-hop political convention, which you are co-founder of, was one that was designed to really do a couple of things. Increase political education for folks so that we wouldn't have these downtimes in between presidential elections, and also maybe be an inspiration for people to start running for office. And a couple of things. I wanted to find out, do you feel that, you know, what are the next steps that you feel need to be taken as you look at the lay of the land traveling the country? I would say, I was just thinking about this before you came on, there's been a number of people that came out of that convention that are running for office, including Angela, who ran for office, Rhymefest, who we may have on the show later on, who ran for a very close office and was defeated when Barack Obama's former chief of staff dumped in like $200,000 in the last minute. We have Khalil Fantuozzi, who's running for mayor of Berkeley here. There's been a lot of young people that came out of that political convention. Kevin Powell in New York running for Congress. A lot of folks. So your thoughts on all that, as well as making sure that there's voter education as we move forward?
I think that in the immediate short term, I think we need to get folks to really spend some time with each other in these next few weeks. In their counties, focusing on these down ballot issues and down ballot races. I think that's the immediate short term. We've had Kahari Mosley in Pittsburgh, who ran for office.
And that's right.
Mm-hmm. Will Mega in
Philadelphia.
In Philadelphia. Angela didn't actually run for office, but she was appointed to a position inside of the last governor's office. But in terms of the short term, I mean, I think a lot of what you're saying, Davey, is pointing to the complexity of a politics. One, it's a constant moving target, and we have to be adaptable to be able to keep up with what's happening. And a lot of times we aren't. I think because our issues aren't always at the forefront, a lot of people become jaded and disengaged at times that we need to be engaged. So I think that we got to understand that it's a process. We're still early in the process for many of the folks within the hip-hop community, and I don't think that we should get so easily discouraged, because that's what the people who don't want us involved are hoping is going to happen. That's what these voter suppression laws really are all about, is to discourage people from being participating in the process.
Right.
If you study the history, these type of voter suppression tactics aren't new. I think this was new about them, as Kathy Cohen said in a recent report that she did out of the Black Youth Project, is the audacity of elected officials to applaud these type of tactics. That is new. And so Kathy Cohen's report out of the Black Youth Project on voter suppression, I think they pointed to something like 700,000 to a million young people in the hip-hop demographic that will be disenfranchised by these voter suppression laws around the country. So I think that's something important to look at. I think we just have to keep on fighting, keep on getting people engaged, keep on getting young people to run, and I think we'll get to a point. The question is not where we are tomorrow, I think, unfortunately. The question is, where will our work put us 20 years from now?
Okay. Well, there you go. Bakari, I appreciate you taking time. I lost Angela by mistake, so we'll have to get her back. But I do want to thank you for coming on the show. I want to thank her for coming on the show and sharing with us how you're seeing things in the middle of the country where night after night, you know, there's a reporter reporting in all 50 states as to what is going on in Ohio. So thank you. And where will the next rap session tour, which has been pretty successful in energizing people, where will that go next?
Next, we're going to be tomorrow night in New Orleans. And we're going to be there with some of the local folks that we're working with, CES45, and some of the other folks. There's young brother who's a spoken word poet, Gian Smith. He did the piece for the HBO show Treme. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah.
So he's going to be with us also. Jelani Cobb, who wrote a very powerful piece on Obama in The New Yorker, I think just last week, he's going to be there, as well as Maya Rocky Moore, who wrote the book, Political Action Handbook for the Hip-Hop Generation.
Well, there you have it. Bakari, we appreciate you coming on the show. I want to thank Angela Woodson. Sorry for the technical difficulties. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Shamakal Noble from Hip-Hop Congress and Tina Bell Wright, professor out of Los Angeles. Here's a song from... Oh, yes, go ahead.
I did forget Angela. Angela ran for office after she was appointed to office. She ran for a city council seat, but prior to that, she was appointed to the governor's office coming out of the work we did in 2004 and 2008.
And we also have Angela back on the line. Angela,
oh, good.
any last comments before we let you go?
No, just everybody needs to really vote. I mean, don't get caught up in all the minutiae and the madness. You got local issues that are on your ballot. I know we got local issues here in Ohio that's actually addressing all that insanity of the redistricting of our congressional seats. And see, when you have issues on that are on the bottom of the ballot, when we talk about that, we need to work down the ballot. Well, I say work up the ballot. Start at the back of the ballot and vote your way up to the presidency, because those issues are going to affect you. And you just gotta go look at those things and take part in that, if nothing more.
Well, there you have it. And I want to thank you. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We'll be joined by our other guests as we continue our discussion of what is happening with the election 2012 season. Davey D hanging out with you, and on the phone line with us, we have a couple of people from the organization Hip Hop Congress, and one is a professor down at in Los Angeles in Southern Cali. Her name is Tina Bell Wright, who has written some incredible articles with the subtitle Hip Hop Nation Rise Up, and has really talked about the intersection of race, politics, what it would mean to have a black man in the White House, what our action should be in the long term. And I'm glad to have her on our airwaves. Shamakal Noble is very skilled and gifted organizer, somebody who has definitely moved away from the two parties and has been hard at work with the third party, working with people like Sherry Hunkler and Jill Stein, among others. And I'm glad to have him on the show. He is somebody who's definitely been giving what we are dealing with in 2012 a whole lot of thought, and I'm glad to have you both on. Let me start off with you, Tina. The election... Yeah, good to have you. The 2012 election season, as I started off, it's been focused around the debates and this, that, and the third. But you've been very clear that we have to look beyond that and really have a different type of context. And maybe I could start off with you explaining some of the things that we really need to consider, especially when we look at it from the standpoint of power and power dynamics.
Sure. I want to first say what's up to you and to Marco. How you doing, Samarco? Good to talk to you both. Basically, I just have been trying to kind of put it into a context that, you know, a lot we don't see often in the mainstream media in particular, why we see a lot of the type of things that we see, like the voter suppression laws that you were talking about before. And the context I kind of put it in is, you know, the issue of race and the backlash of progress and, you know, backlash that has come with each kind of progressive movement that we've had from the beginning of this country's time. So basically, you know, its original sin, stealing land, enslaving folks, and the way its power was gained. And whenever we've been able to progress and move on, there's always been some kind of backlash to it. And I kind of tried to show this has been no different in terms of, you know, forces trying to continue status quo, power structure, white supremacy in particular. And I think that that is really a lot of what we're seeing kind of playing out, specifically in some of the type of things we're seeing with the pushback in immigration, the Arizona type stuff, like I said, the voter suppression. All of those type of things.
Let me ask you this. What should our response be? Many people have been like, well, I voted, nothing's happened, and therefore I'm done. But you've said, no, it's a lot more.
I think the question that I ask my students, and I think everyone has to ask themselves, is basically one key question. What are you doing? And that's a constant state. Okay, so what are you doing in terms to see what you want to see done? It's not something that you can do one time. It's a constant kind of motion. So I think we all have to be willing to understand that change happens. You know, it's happening every day, but the kind of change we want to see will take all of us, because people power is something that is not going to happen with, you know, a 5% activist type group handling it for the rest of us, 99%. 99% have to be active for themselves. Self-determination, really, in terms of community determination, is the only way to kind of, you know, hold back the type of forces we're dealing with in terms of power, money, you know, corporatization and that type of thing. It's a constant struggle. The struggle kind of will continuously go, but it also takes all hands in. I think, you know, especially with the push to what I wrote about in this last piece, was how privatization is kind of the way to have resources remain in the hands of few when demographic shift is occurring. So with the, you know, fear of the black brown planet, especially in this country, happening, those in power are trying to make sure they keep that power through these mechanisms of privatizing everything public. And so you want,
no, go ahead. No, go ahead. Finish up that point.
And so, you know, to do that, they're, you know, trying to basically shift all public funds into private hands so that they can, you know, keep their power. And the only way that we, those that basically control all those things, can do it is through organization and localization is what I believe.
Shamako, how are you seeing things, especially, and we were talking just the other day, and you were talking about the importance of us really building something new. You know, I think you're at a point, as many have been, that there's some things that just ain't going to be reformed.
Well, you know, first thing I want to say, Davey, and just in kind of response to, well, first off, what up, Tina? And thank you for having me on the show. I do want to recommend for folks the series that you are talking about, Rise Up Hip Hop Nation. It is, it's an outstanding series of essays. I'm looking forward to the book. you know, I've been talking to folks about this, like the question you asked about, you know, I voted and nothing's happening. And I started to view it and discuss it in terms of health, right? In terms of social and political health. Because when you talk to people about like working out, nobody goes to the gym for one day, you know, eats healthy for one day and says, how come I'm not thin or how come I'm not ripped? It's an everyday practice. Like you have to be vigilant about it. And really what we're talking about is political and social health. And that's going to require us to take time out of our day almost daily to be involved in some way. That could be just familiarizing yourself with the issues. It could be getting involved in some local things going on. It could be just the process of building community. But it's an everyday thing. In terms of where we are kind of in general, you know, I was listening to Bakari, you know, before we came on. And Bakari said it's about the 20-year span. I would agree with that. And I think that we have some very urgent things on the horizon, which Tina, I feel like, details very well in her essays. We have the fiscal cliff on the horizon. We have some very dramatic cuts coming at the state and the federal level on the horizon. Public education is under assault right now. Collective bargaining rights is under assault right now. And the reality of the situation is that these things are going to continue to happen regardless of the outcome of the presidential election. At best, what this determines is the speed at which they take place, maybe. I think one other point I kind of want to make here is that when we talk about the three-party system, you know, Tina alluded to sort of, and I think that this has been a conversation throughout the course of this election, sort of a mandate on white supremacy. But I've been talking with some folks recently, and one of the things that's really interesting about this whole conversation is how well we understand, say, the concept of internalized racism and how poorly we understand the concept of internalized classism. And when we look at the idea of the, say, the young population, right, or people of color, particularly black people, voting for Barack Obama because, you know, it's familiar. It's something that you can look at your children and say, hey, you can be president. This is a response to internalized racism. But when we look at the similarities between Romney and Obama and the sort of similar positions that both candidates take, the similar positions that both parties take, what we're really looking at is a broader form of internalized classism and sort of the onset of, for you know, lack of better terms, corporate fascism in America. And you know, when we talk about what the candidates are talking about, well, that's it. That's part of the reason I ended up in the Green Party is because, you know, for all intents and purposes, nobody else is really talking about the things that are happening in my local community in a forthright, honest, and healthy manner other than, you know, Jill Stein and Sherry Hawker.
What has it been, you know, let me just ask either one, and I'll start off with you, Tina, as we kind of wrap up on this section here. Is it wise for us to get into a third party when people are saying, and even Shamako just said, there's so much at stake. Is it a wasted vote? Is it a spoiler type of situation? Or do we have to suck it up once and for all and start to build that new paradigm, which I know Shamako was kind of, you know, that's the overarching theme. Or do we do what's most politically expedient?
Well, Shamako and I have had this conversation, and he understands that, you know, everything has to be strategic in voting as well. So, of course, in this corporate election, it's not going to be as effective right now, but he's building, and we're building, and we have to continue building. Localization, what Sherry and Jill are doing, has to be built on and continue so that you can move away from these two-party corporate systems. So, of course, it has to be done. We have to vote our interests. We have to vote our conscience. People have to do what they feel is right in terms of those two things. Then you have to deal with the consequences as they come as well in terms of strategy.
So that's where I stand. That I think people absolutely have to, you know, understand how they're voting, how it will be affected, but vote their interest and vote their conscience.
That's real talk, Shamako. Anything that you would add to this as we get ready to close out? How have things been just being excluded from the debates? I mean, tonight I know that your candidates are well-schooled, but they will not be on the podium.
I mean, it's frustrating because we're on the ballot in 38 states. And some of the states were not on the ballot. There is a concerted bipartisan effort. You know, it's funny that I talk about, you know, the struggle with bipartisanship. I'll tell you one place where there's no struggle, keeping other people off the ballot. They get real cooperative around that. But, I mean, it's frustrating. It's extremely frustrating because in a corporate-driven or corporate media-driven environment, it's like everybody's looking for some form of, you know, legitimization, some external legitimization, somebody to come and say, this is real. And our life is real. It's real regardless of whether or not BET or Viacom or whoever says it's real. And so, you know, like Tina said, we're going to continue to build. One thing I'm really clear on is that the moment is urgent, and this is bigger and longer than just this election. So, you know, our goal is to stay present, to stay working at the local level, at the regional level, at the national level, at the international level, and to be prepared for what's on the horizon, because these are objective things that are going to happen regardless of what any candidate says. And so the best that we can do is be ready for when the lie can no longer be accepted.
That's real talk. We've been talking with Shamako Noble of Hip Hop Congress. We also been talking with Tina Bell Wright, professor down in Southern Cali, as well as a member of Hip Hop Congress as well. Look for her series called Hip Hop Nation Rise Up. And I want to thank both of you all for coming on the show. Coming up next, we're going to be talking with Toki Wright out of Minneapolis and hopefully Rhyme Fest out of Chicago. I want to leave you with a new song that has come out that addresses the issue of money and politics. It's called Candidate for Sale. It's featuring Rhyme Fest Grammy Award winner along with Invincible out of Detroit and Jasiri X, and we'll be right back.
But just so I can clarify this for the media, this may be a breaking news announcement for the media. I am the Koch brothers' brother from another mother. Yes, I'm their brother from another mother, and proud of it.
We got candidates for sale. Step right up, let's make a deal. Trust me, they can't wait to fail and send a 99% straight to hell. We got candidates for sale. Step right up, let's make a deal. Trust me, they can't wait to fail and send a 99% straight to hell. The 1% run the government by giving billions to Democrats and Republicans. Cold hard cash seals the covenant, but with strings attached so you can see who the puppet is. I blame the justices, cause they decided to rival corporations versus citizens united. Even though they private liars and biased, now they don't have to vote in elections, they just buy them. So all the poor people be quiet, your vote just went on the diet. To these tyrants, they the candidates' clients. The contributions are just paychecks for their alliance. It's not rocket science, it's simple math, which equals the decline of the middle class. And the poor treated like they invisible, sad, cause these political whores are tricking for cash. We got candidates for sale. Step right up, let's make a deal. Trust me, they can't wait to fail and send a 99% straight to hell. We got candidates for sale. Step right up, let's make a deal. Trust me, they can't wait to fail and send a 99% straight to hell.
It's a damn shame. Politicians should be dressing up like NASCAR drivers, covered in brand names, sponsorship certificates for campaigns. If you ain't contribute millions, you insignificant as a sand grain. They in the fast lane, and every pit stop on election race, they hitting up the Section 8. Then afterwards, they tear them down for new developments and pop the champagne. That's why we create what we want, not just a man change. It's a scandalous process when the candidates profit off the corporations. They contaminants, it's cancerous, it's cancer sick, toxic. We stand the risk, satanic shit, abandon shit. They treat us like inanimate objects. The military industry commanding this complex. We the panel of analysts, understand it and stop it. While they sit and count their dough, it never trickles down below. Can't hold them accountable, the same is true around the globe. So,
we got candidates for sale. Step right up, let's make a deal. Trust me, they can't wait to fail and send a 99% straight to hell. We got candidates to sell. Step right up, let's make a deal. Trust me, they can't wait to fail and send a 99% straight to hell.
Senate and the Congress on auction blocks, prostituting off the clock. Man, you can't even call the cops. Hell, you can't even call Barack. He got his hand in the pots. You even sent your last 20 to him. Wrote him a letter and he smiled. It was funny to him. America. He gon' need that times 20,000. Or you can say goodbye to your public housing. Hit the donate button. Stop the fuck around. Blood money, hood money, all good money. Trust funds, stock bonds, all good for me. Keep feeding into the system. We got a full tummy. Dummy. It don't matter what you're calling them or what party you in. Go and vote. We own all of them. Wall Street, big banks, and the revenue. Have compassion. Corporations are people, too.
Corporations are people, my friend.
We got candidates for sale. Step right up, let's make a deal. Trust me, they can't wait to fail and send a 99% straight to hell. We got candidates to sell. Step right up, let's make a deal. Trust me, they can't wait to fail and send a 99% straight to hell.
The new song is called Candidates for Sale. And I wanted to get Rhymefest on the line with us, who is in Chicago. We also have Toki Wright, who is part of a collective, the best of the best in Minneapolis, which has been another contested state where they came out to talk about the voter suppression stuff. But I wanted to start off with you, Rhymefest. We were talking about the number of young people like yourselves who have been running for office, heavily involved in electoral politics. And how are you seeing things winding up as we look at the 2012 election season, especially when you are part of a song that talks about candidates for sale? It seems like some people are saying, wow, there's a definite cynicism going on here. Or is it just a reality that people better wake up to?
I think that's a great question. I have a friend who's a congressman, a good friend. And I asked him, I said, if you have $5 million in your bank account, would you still want to be a congressman? His response was, hell no. I said, well, why not? Why wouldn't you want to be a congressman if you had $5 million? He said, you know, to get on a campaign, on a committee, to be part of a committee, which is the Black Caucus or the Democratic Party, you know, to be appointed to a chair. He said, you have to raise money. So I have to raise, because of the state he's from, he has to raise $500,000 a year just for the Black Caucus. He has to raise another $600,000 a year for his campaign to be able to run. He said, now, where do you think I get that money from? Do you think I said, well, you know, $10 here, $15 there? He said, no. He said, I get it from corporations. We have to get that. The only way we can make our numbers is to get it from corporations. He said, so by the time it's time for me to vote, how much vote do you think I have left for my constituents when the corporations gave me all of the money to leverage my vote?
Wow.
He said, not much.
And, you know, it's interesting. We have here in San Francisco a supervisor race in the city of San Francisco with Eric Marr, who's a well-known progressive, where his opposition has already spent a couple of million dollars against him. This is for not even Congress. This is like local races, so the money is obscene. I wanted to ask you a quick question before I get to Toki Wright, who's on the line with us. You famously backed Barack Obama in 2008. You were probably one of the staunchest and very visible person out there, you know, with your visibility and what have you. You ran for office. You were part of a large number of young people, from Kevin Powell to yourselves and some other people who I've mentioned who ran. Went into a runoff, but it was Barack Obama's chief of staff who did you in at the last minute.
Yeah.
By putting tons of money into an election to keep somebody there versus allowing you to come in. And I bring this up to say it was people like Rhymefest who led the charge, that did concerts, that gave money, that talked him up, that put him in that White House. Were you surprised to see the political payback, so to speak, was like, you know what, I'm going to have my guy basically body you in an election?
Well, I think...
And you lost by 300 votes, I should say.
Yeah.
You know.
Rahm Emanuel is not in Chicago as mayor because Barack still wanted him as chief of staff. Rahm Emanuel, let's keep in mind, he worked for the Clinton administration. And a lot of who Barack has around him are old members of the Bush and Clinton administration. That's one of the things that I think Cornel West, Dr. West was talking about. See, black people, we know how to vote. We always talk about blacks, we need to vote. We need to leverage the votes that we make. I think black people have, and Mexican and Latins have never been taught how to leverage the votes that we make. So we're not getting the most out of Barack. We're not getting the most out of our Democrat or political leaders because we know how to vote them in, but we don't know how to get them to do what we want them to do. And when Cornel West tried to get the vote leveraged by pressing the president, what did we do? We ran them out.
Right. That's something to definitely think about. I want to bring Toki right in and Nick. They're part of a collective effort out of Minneapolis where you all have been talking about voter suppression. You just did a song. Hopefully we have time to play a little bit of it called Face the Vote. I'll start off with you, Toki. And what is this about? How ingrained or how much of a problem is voter suppression for you guys in Minneapolis? And what are you looking for in this debate tonight? Or are you even looking? I'll start off with you, Toki.
Well, what we're dealing with, first of all, good to talk to you, baby. What's up, Ronfest? This is the voter ID bill that's coming up on the upcoming ballot on November 6th. And what we have is that there have been literally, I think, about 6 actual cases of voter fraud recorded in the last few elections. So there's really not a significant amount of people that have even found cases of voter fraud, and what they're doing now is they've created this bill, and it's up for vote, which would make it mandatory for you to have a government issued photo ID and current with your current address in order to vote. And what this would do is it would disenfranchise a lot of students, people with housing instability, communities of color, people with disabilities, people out in the rural areas. You know, we have a large population of people that live on the reservations. We have active duty service members and veterans. And it would pretty much eliminate absentee voting and same-day registration as we know it in the state of Minnesota.
Nick, I know you've been a part of bringing all these people together. Do you expect and are you satisfied with the response from the president, especially when we look at the debates, to bring this issue up? Because it is so many communities that are vulnerable to this, and it's communities like the one that you're a part of that put him in the White House in the first place.
Well, I got to say that my focus really lies on us taking charge of our individual power. You know, I also campaigned in the 08 election as well up here in Minnesota. But one of the main things that I want to get across is that the job doesn't stop once we put them in that White House. At the end of the day, when Fess was talking about, you know, leveraging the vote, the one thing that we need to do consistently is remain a base and operate somewhat collectively, you know, maybe not the entire population of African Americans, but there needs to be a solid 30-40% of us that stay organized and we put forth the pressure collectively, so it's not just one person standing up and taking a fall and being able to be chopped down. We need to stay collective as a community going forward. And in my city, in my state, the thing that's most insulting about this entire voter ID bill is in 08 we came out in record numbers. Now Minnesota already has one of the best track records for voter turnout in the country. We have one of the best voter systems in the country. As far as the amendment goes, the only reason this amendment is on the books is because instead of them being, you know, the opposing party saying, how do we accommodate this new voter base?
they're saying, how can we shave it down so that we don't even have to see what they're expecting of us and have to even cater to them to begin with. So they're really just trying to shut people out of the system.
Right.
At the end of the day, OA showed us some power, but at the end of the day, that power was in us coming collectively together. And that showed what we can actually get accomplished if we continue that particular practice. And that's what I'm interested in pushing for. As far as the president goes, he's no good if we don't organize ourselves. Like, at the end of the day, the pressure is better coming from all of us, not just one or two or three, you know, big names.
Well, there you have it. Nick, we have run out of time. Toki Wright, I appreciate you being on the show. And Ryan Fest, I appreciate you dropping signs. We're going to go out of here as we make way for the next show. Maybe.
Different day, different times. Gotta use your mind, they might try to make you blind. That's alright, cause through it all, you still gon' shine. Stand up for your rights and you'll be left alone. Middle finger to the ones in the middle, wanna take your rights away. The mind is such a bright display. The voter card, I fight the day for Martin, Malcolm, Marcus. I did it, really got to admit it, it ain't hard to say. Put your hands up if you color broken, out of work, ain't got nowhere to go. But couldn't let you know, really here, it ain't all good.
When I look around, I'm looking in disgust. Thought for once things was looking up, in God we trust, now it's all on us. We the new freedom fighters on the bus. We ain't going out, we gon' ride no doubt. Till the wheels fall off, we the soldiers now. They move in, we gon' move them out. Like occupied homes over south. This our hood, we gon' hold it down. Can't eat good with a closed mouth. Can't complain if you don't go. Even though I know it feel like your vote don't count. Welfare ain't playing fair. We don't need no one to pay our share. Healthcare equals health scare. The lesser of two evils, hell yeah.
Ambassador of the brown voice. Me, Henta, we got a choice. Too lit to be heard, recognize where we stand in this plan. I demand this is nothing to avoid. In a land where scholarship checks void, and we bury our girls and boys. Due to bullet wounds while they watching the cartoons and news for more to be deployed. He's a part of, so of God. You can die for 13 stripes. Police, these are casualties before they even read us our rights. Women of color cursed twice. You have now, we give more life. Planned Parenthood in a dream act to marry a husband or a wife.
I took a peek at the speeches and must have seen a demon. Mustered the gusto to crush the seed that could feed the heathens. It ain't a deeper reason than seeing your people grieving. Believe in Skip what he say, leave that beefing thing at BK. Seen preteens that live like D-Day. War in the streets, no peace, don't be safe. And I don't know the ins and the outs. I don't really know what this is about. And I don't know who runs this world, I just know we don't. We ain't got no clout if we don't speak out. Then it won't exist, next thing on the list is cross us out.
Time is now more than ever, then gotta represent, set a precedent for the president. If we don't interject, then our residents will be negligent. I recommend vote no for the voter ID this year at the polls, brother. Get your ass off the floor, brother. They targeting your color. Hey, believe it or not, the truth is, homie, then look at your block. Read between the lines and view the plot. We can do something, but we gotta stop procrastinating. If we don't, we self-assassinating. Pointless of emancipation. True freedom will be advocating. Vote no.
Suppression, it keeps us from being lifted. They treat our rights wrong as if they are privileges. Abusing their authority, the targets the minority. Try ignoring me, guarantee that you'll hear more from me. I'm speaking for the people, we fight for the 15th Amendment. I figured out your tactics to keep us in prison. Attacking the masses with distractions, better pay attention. So much division is sickening, lack of knowledge hurts us, listen.
And I can't even vote, but I ain't gon' sit back here and choke. Voter ID my team like dope. I swear they try and sink our vote. I'm tired of all of this nonsense. Ignorance, I'm not feeling this. So everybody that's listening, vote by me with no ID.
Ay. My ballot is my bullet now. Come November, pull it out and dump. At they suppression, we gotta vote it down. Stop playing, vote it down. Stop playing, vote it down.
Wake up, walk out, look up, read the damn news. Man, this stuff applies to you, maybe go talk amongst your crew. These people say what you should do. Never trust the next dude. Show and prove. Tell me why I shouldn't let you just do you. I'm talking big bank takes little bank. That bait and switch them chains. Some people win, some people lose. They way to play the game. They say it's just for your protection. I know where I'm placing blame. They here to lose, I think they here to keep me out they lane.
Some came over on a boat, some came in on a raft, some came in on an aircraft carrier. Some put that boot to your throat to revoke what happened to the more the merrier. They standing on the island of Ellis, and when I start standing up for mine, they jealous. When the times get hellish, know I got it from my mind, realign with my fellas, and my ladies too. They tryna get us all back to 1882. So they made an amendment, meant it, meant this ain't gonna make it through. Cause I'm standing with my folks, standing on my boat, knowing that I'm back for the ropes. At best bet 10-6, I'ma get back in the booth and I'm checking off no, you know.
Speak for my generation, they think we ain't debating. They fake acts based on accusations, discrimination. How many politicians put themselves in oppositions? You voices what they missing, claim we don't pay attention. That's the collision on truth and true opinion. They don't see our vision, they excuses, good intentions. Well, the vision is clear, despite what you might hear. We hear voices with actions about to hop in the gear, yeah.
Tell me who's included, tell me who's excluded. People of color, low income, it's time we start the movement. We won the right to vote, now it's under attack. Voter suppressing got me stressing, trying to set us back. Threaten democracy, no stopping till no power's left. A fake solution with no problem trying to solve itself. My people die to vote, respect the legacy. No voter ID, hit the streets, we